Completely Conspicuous, episode 430, July 26, 2016. Welcome back to Completely Conspicuous. I'm your host, Jay Kumar. This week, it's part one of my conversation with guest Jay Breitling as we discuss our favorite music of the first half of 2016. As always, please send any comments, questions, or Sharknado 4 spoilers to jay.kumar@gmail.com. Also, please check out Completely Conspicuous at comconcast.blogspot.com and on Facebook. And you can follow me on Twitter at coomdog. You can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. And now, on to my conversation with Jay Breitling.
All right.
Hello!
It's a Sunday night, a different night of the... Usually we're here on a Friday night.
Yeah, mixing it up.
Yeah. I went to get beer for this, and the place I usually go to was closed, which was kind of a bummer.
Oh, but, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
No wonder you got free Pabst swag.
Anyway, I'm here with the great Jay Breitling. How's it going, Jay?
I am great.
You are great.
Thank you for noticing.
Yes. This is Movie Phone, the Movie Phone podcast.
Mid-year music special.
Yes, actually, it's completely conspicuous. I'm kidding, of course.
Of course.
Is our annual mid-year report of our favorite music so far this year.
Which, to, you know, not to name names, but you know, I see some of the more prominent websites coming out with their mid-year report on June 1st.
Yeah.
That's only 5 months.
Yeah.
They're not fooling anybody.
I call bullshit on that.
Yeah, so those guys get Channel 11.
This is actually... Yeah, this is actually, we're in July now, so...
Yeah, but only 3 days.
We got a full mid-year to report on.
The entire mid-year.
Yes.
Yes. So that's exciting.
Yes.
We're that many percent better. I do the 5, 6, 6, 6. 5, 6 is 83 and a third, so I think we're like 16 and two-thirds percent better than those hosers from June 1st.
Math.
Mm-hmm.
Here's to math. Here's to some Newburyport, Melt Away,
yes.
Session Ale.
That's our beer sponsor
Session
for this
IPA.
Evening. Melts Away. I don't often drink the Newburyport, but this is...
They do fine work.
Yeah, they do reliable work.
Indeed.
And the fellow from Boom Said Thunder, was that the name of the band? We'll just say it was.
Sure.
He did all their graphic design. And so that's one to grow on.
Well, my supervisor's husband is like the computer guy for them. So
two
you probably know
on.
That dude.
Mm-hmm. John Magnifico, if you're listening.
Ooh, that's a good name.
Yeah. Magnifico Design.
Sure.
Did the,
free
and
plug.
I think he designed those, you know, I believe the Newburyport has the plastic, like, cat.
Yeah.
Thingy-doos. I think he designed that.
And they, originally when they came out, there would be a
you
guitar
know, the
pick.
Thingy-doos.
There'd be
oh,
a guitar
yeah,
pick
guitar
in each, each six-pack, which they
yeah.
stopped doing after a while. But
yeah.
I have about 3 or 4 of those.
Mm, useful.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't been using them lately, but...
Mid-year report.
But the mid-year report. We got shanghaied early.
Out of the gates.
Anyways, yeah, so let's talk about, before we get into sort of our favorite music so far this year, some of the notable trends and whatnot of the music year. I think the biggest one is death. I mean,
death?
I mean, every year there are musicians who, you know, notable musicians die, but... Like, these first 6 months of this year, it's been ridiculous. I mean,
yeah.
right off the bat, Bowie, you know, Glenn Frey, I mean...
Other dead guys.
No, it's been crazy.
You know, Elvis's guitar player, I think he
yeah,
just
Scotty
died.
Moore just died, yeah. But, I mean,
yeah,
it's
the,
just been
the
like...
The list is long, and...
Paul Kantner.
Obviously, Prince.
Prince, yeah.
The big one.
Yeah.
So yeah, the dead people, that's a, they've certainly been mounting. I mean, to a certain extent, you know, rock and roll era started. I've been reading a very good book by the guy from Saint Etienne, and I've probably mentioned it before because I've been reading it for about
2 years,
10 months, but and it's fascinating, and I enjoy reading it.
What's it called?
It's called, I think it's called Yeah, the history of pop from the Beatles to Beyonce.
Oh wow!
And you know, start
is it like 8,000 pages?
It's not 8,000, but I think it's maybe 450, and I'm about sizable. I'm about 300 in, and it I like the approach because it, you know, kind of puts things in an order that is chronological, but you know, if you didn't know where, for example, soft rock and Philadelphia soul and Motown, like how those cogs all fit together, it kind of puts mm-hmm. everything in an order, and it so it each chapter is kind of devoted to a style or a trend or something, but or key musicians. Usually that's a style and then the key players, and it's roughly chronological. I mean, everything kind of overlaps a little sure. bit, but you know, the if you didn't know where, to just another example, where the Sweet and Slade and Bowie sure. and Mott the Hoople and, you know, T-Rex, how, like, what was the exact order of all that? It's kind of laid out in the book. So anyway, good book, but, you know, I am working my way through it, and I don't even remember why I brought it up.
You brought it up because pop music started 50 right. years ago.
And now all these people are dying.
All these people are in their, you know, you've got a whole mm-hmm. generation of musicians who are in their 60s, you know, 70s, yeah. you know, and beyond. And you know, obviously in Prince's case, he died fairly young at 57. Yeah. But, you know, you got a lot of these guys are just getting old.
Yeah, and Prince, now we know there is, you know, there's something else going on, obviously, besides yeah. old age.
Yeah, well, yeah, his case wasn't age, it was... But it was, you know, debilitating hip injury from basically just playing concerts.
Doing Prince,
and,
yeah.
You know, wearing heels and jumping around and stuff. And then, you know, developed a, I guess, a dependency on painkillers.
But, yeah, on the fentanyl, which is apparently 50 times stronger than the morphine. So
right. That's but, not good. But then, you know, a lot of these guys, like Bowie and I guess Glenn Frey and a bunch of these guys, you know, I just had cancer. I mean, just, you know, things that you get.
And they're 70, 72, 74.
Yeah. You know, I mean, there's a whole, I mean, this is just going to keep happening. I mean, it's just, you know, there's so many rock stars now that are in that, you know, basically senior citizen age group. Mm-hmm. So, sad to say, this is going to keep happening.
Well, and even, you know, your post-punk artists, you know, your Mission of Burma guys, you know, there's
Roger Miller's in his 60s.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. There are a lot of the artists we respect from the post-punk era, they're all, you know, they're not that far behind.
Right.
And you know, neither are we. So, you know, it's all part of the same thing.
But it's been, it was...
Circle of life.
Yeah, totally Hakuna circle Matata. Of life, but still a kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
Just to see how much of this, you know, it seemed like almost every week for a while there, it was just another mm-hmm. huge
yeah,
name.
Yeah, it started with Bowie and then it just kept...
Actually, it started with Lemmy at the end, right after Christmas, mm-hmm. he died, and then it was like Bowie a week later, and then just one after another.
Yeah. A brief aside, I know we don't normally countenance this sort of behavior.
That's all right, no tangents, damn it.
But,
stick to the point!
A story that I saw pop up and then get little play, and I was glad because this is the sort of story I don't read because I don't like to have this stuff in my head. There's too much other stuff going on. I, you know, rather keep positive stuff in my head than negative stuff. But did you see the story about, I can't remember the outlet now, you know, kind of a middling outlet, Radar or somebody,
mm-hmm.
Came out with information about things that were found in the Jackson Mansion.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and so anyway, just, I'm not going to go into that, but I'm just going to say, not so bad that guy's dead. You know?
Yeah, yeah, if that's true,
Yeah, not so bad.
Pretty nasty.
Yeah, so,
moving on. No need to dwell on that. Some other stuff. we were just talking before we fired up the old podcastification machine about big Ticketmaster the lawsuit master. That was settled.
Schlesinger versus Ticketmaster. Whoever.
And it, you know, magically bequeathed upon all of us who had bought tickets from, like, I think, 99 to 2010 or something like that. All these supposed vouchers and free tickets and all this stuff. So everybody found out, oh, I get this stuff. And then they're like, oh, well, you can use them, but only on these certain shows.
In certain markets.
In certain markets at basically like sheds, like, you know, outdoor amphitheaters.
Yeah.
Like in our area, it's the
Great
Infinity
Woods.
Center, which, or yeah, formerly known as Great Woods, out in Mansfield, Mass. I think the cops are coming to get us as we're talking about Ticketmaster.
It's a tough town.
Yeah. But, so, like, there was all these shows, and I was looking, I'm like, I don't even really go there anymore, but, you know, I was like, well, Black Sabbath's playing there with Ozzy, you know, in August, and...
Supposedly last tour.
Supposedly last tour, since, you know, one of those guys will probably die soon. But, so I was like, oh, maybe I'll try and get a ticket to that, you know.
Sold out.
Well... First, they're like, you know, enter your voucher code. I'm like, oh, what the hell's my voucher code? I didn't have one. They didn't actually give me one.
Yeah.
Like, they said I had all these things, but then
you can't do anything.
And then, like, so I'm like, well, I'm trying to find out, and I'm like, maybe I should do my job for a while. So then I come back, and I look, and every single show that they listed all across the country sold out.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, this is just bullshit. So, I wasn't, like, getting my hopes up, but... It just seems kind of bogus. Like, if it was a real settlement, wouldn't they just, like, let you pick whatever the hell show you want?
Yeah,
you pretty much have to buy every ticket. You know, just let it apply. I don't even... It doesn't have to be free tickets, but give me $5 off or something, you know?
Well, I didn't dig too deeply into it. I feel like I had a list of vouchers, or a number of vouchers, and then I also had a number of...
$2.
$2.50, which is basically, like, all the service fees, I think.
Right. Well, not even.
Refunded.
But, yeah.
So, you know, I feel like those are ultimately going to be more valuable.
Yeah, yeah. But there's still no... There's no, like, way to use them right now.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
And that, as a man who has some, you know, understanding of the legal profession, that goes to show that, however... The settlement was crafted in the way it was crafted on purpose.
Yeah.
There are people whose whole job it is to write those things, and they jockey, they horse trade, it's, you know, everything you would imagine as far as people getting in a room and making a deal.
Let's make this so difficult to use that nobody will actually use it. We won't actually spend any money.
Yeah, and to the extent that it is useful, just meant that the plaintiff's counsel had... some leverage, but the fact that the settlement actually is terrible but looks good on paper means that obviously Ticketmaster came out with the upper hand.
Right. They're like, look, we're gonna give the public all this great stuff. Here's a system, here's how you use it. And then we're gonna make it so complicated that nobody will actually be able to figure out how to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be so confusing that by the time anybody does figure it out, it'll have expired or something, and we'll move on to the next.
And it really shouldn't be any surprise, because this is how the public understands Ticketmaster operates.
Yeah.
They've always screwed us. They will continue to screw us. This settlement is just another manifestation of them screwing us. So,
and that is why we call them Ticket Bastard.
Indeed. So, to you guys, we say, screw you.
Yeah. They get the Channel 11.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Another notable thing was the Stairway to Heaven lawsuit.
Oh, yeah.
Which just wrapped up last week. Which was basically the estate of this guy, Randy California, who was a guitarist with the band Spirit, who has passed away probably 10 years ago. But they had a song called Taurus that I guess sounds a lot like the
intro.
Not a hit. It sounds a lot like the intro to Stairway to Heaven, which every kid who ever picked up a guitar has probably tried to play at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But 45 years after the song comes out, they file this lawsuit saying, you know, well, they opened for Zeppelin a few times in, like, 68.
Zeppelin must have known about the song.
Yeah. But
Zeppelin has a history of recording other people's music.
Yeah. So, you know, this long trial, relatively, you know, Plant, Page, and Jones are there. There's all these hilarious courtroom sketches of them sitting there looking very, you know, annoyed and stuff. But, you know, in the end, I guess the jury found that there was no infringement.
As they should have.
Yeah,
I mean, I think anybody with an abiding interest probably did what I did, which is watch the dude on YouTube go through, this is the one song, this is the other song. Oh, by the way, here's about 75 classical songs that from 500 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think as soon as you...
Yeah, that guy was awesome.
Yeah, as soon as you cross that threshold into an understanding of... you know, there's a finite... I mean, there's a world of creativity in music. You can go in a million directions, and that's one of the reasons why we talk about it regularly on the program. But... there is a finite number of ways that you can put the 12 tones together.
Yeah.
There is there is some likely biological or psychological component that makes certain tones, certain harmonies pleasing, and that's why you see them repeat and over hundreds of years, if not longer. And so... you know, saying that if you were going to say the guy from, you know, Randy, California gets a nickel, then you also have to say all these other dudes get a nickel, and you know, there's no...
Well, and
where does it end?
And let's be clear. They recorded Willie Dixon songs and did not give him credit. Yep. They... You know, that was right that they were found that they had to give him credit.
Yeah.
Because obviously, you know, and I don't know what their argument was, but, you know, that I think their argument is that these are just blues standards that have been around for however many years, and we appropriated them, but they still got to give the guy credit. So, you know, let's not, you know, I'm not saying that hasn't happened, but this was totally different. And actually very similar to the Robin Thicke case of a couple of years ago, where he was found to have ripped off
Marvin Gaye?
It was a Marvin Gaye song, yeah. But you know what? I think it was like, I think that was kind of bullshit too. I mean, that was kind of, it was similar, but it wasn't like a straight rip. So I think he kind of got hosed because they had, you know, the jury just kind of got caught up. And they, what they needed was like a dude like they had in this, an expert like they had in this trial to kind of say, look, this is...
Well, they thought they had one. And that's my favorite thing.
Oh, the Marvin Gaye thing? And the,
My favorite thing about that particular lawsuit is... they thought they were going to put Pharrell on the stand, and he was going to explain.
Oh, right, because he was the one who basically came up with it, right?
Yeah, he was a producer. Thicke, whatever his name is, had already testified that he was so hopped up on pills that he basically just showed up and Pharrell did it, and then maybe he sang. He doesn't even remember because he's on the drugs.
What a dope.
But so they thought they're going to put Pharrell on because he's supposed to be this, you know, musical genius, this prodigy. And the attorneys examined him and were able to elicit testimony that basically indicated that Pharrell actually has no, you know, knowledge of music theory, of anything that you would know from going to music school or being able to read music. He might be able to read music, but I don't even know if he showed that he could read music. So I think, you know, everybody thought, well, Pharrell is awesome. He knows everything about music. Certainly he would be able to explain all of these things about music theory. And
so that,
and then it turned out that he couldn't explain any of it, and he was sort of exposed as a charlatan. So,
oh, wow. So basically, like, they're saying, well, if you can't read music, then you must have obviously just copied this riff or whatever.
To pull it back to what happened, I think that's the case. But I just like the guy being exposed as a fraud. Not that...
hasn't hurt his career any.
So. Yeah, and I don't... It's
hurt Robin Thicke's career, though. He's freaking done, I think.
But. Yeah, well, he's got issues. But, you know, I think it's fine to only play music by ear. I play music by ear. I had lessons from the age of 4 to, like, 5 and a half, and then, you know, none of that stayed in my head. But I think if you hold yourself out as being, you know, a musical genius, then if you get taken to school, then you get taken to school.
Yeah.
So, cool. So that's what I think of that.
All right. Well, anyway, yeah, so the Zeppelin thing was interesting, and I think had they been found liable, it would have opened up the floodgates for, you know, any number of bands to get sued by any number of people. So I think it was kind of a good thing. So
yeah, there's no the where does it end? I don't know. In the outside of the context of what we do here, you know, there was just a Supreme Court ruling where I don't know. Remember if it was a governor or who, but some dude in Virginia who was a political guy, an important politician, was. His conviction for being a dirty lying bastard was thrown out, and the reason, obviously I've got a real strong command of the facts here, but the reason it was thrown out was the courts, you know, kind of argued, well, where does it end? If which in the end protects all of us, believe it or not, you know, if you know, there's bad law out there that could ensnare anybody for a large amount of reasons, as opposed to ensnaring real bad guys doing bad things, you know, that's bad for everybody. So,
even Jay's a law talking guy, he knows what he's talking about.
Not a real law talking guy, but I've sit in here a lot.
You work with law talking guys. Yeah.
So, you know, if the, you know, the guy I think was a dirty lying bastard and probably broke some laws, but he gets out of jail free for this one, and that's probably not necessarily a bad thing, and hopefully he'll go to jail for something else.
Yeah.
And that's what I think of that.
Sure. I don't know if we explained anything there, but...
Led Zeppelin, good.
Yes.
Guy in Virginia, bad. There, I think that covers it up.
That's clear.
Yes, crystal.
Another one thing I want to discuss before we get to...
year in review.
Mid-year review. Sort of the state of streaming. You know, like, we're kind of... Obviously, like, we're moving to the point where... You know, physical music sales, if anything, are basically now vinyl. But
yeah,
you know, CDs are diminishing, and it's streaming. That you know, and
music as a service.
Music as a service, but you know, that's kind of taken some interesting forms. I mean, obviously, Tidal was the big splash, and that kind of.
And did you see the latest Tidal headline? Because I feel like maybe you haven't, based on how you're delivering this up. Late in the week. There was news in the Wall Street Journal, and of course, this we're going to be running this later. But that Apple Music was interested in purchasing.
I did see that. Tidal. Yeah.
And what I liked was seeing insight from our friend and former—I don't know how you would describe him—but the great Matt Graves.
Yeah,
had a remark about that, saying that his read was. The story in the Wall Street Journal couldn't be an Apple Music leak because there's no ground to be gained. You know, Apple can reap no advantage by leaking the story to the Wall Street Journal itself. So his take was that Tidal's leaking it, trying to draw out, you know, make a bidding war.
Right.
Draw out larger party.
Yeah.
And, you know, that... you know, to again turn this whole conversation where it's not supposed to be going. You know, I think that the title seems like it was always, they said, oh, it's artist centric, it's artist blah, blah, blah. It's really all about enriching this top tier of artists that certain people like me hate. And now this is their exit strategy because they all just want to get paid and go right. do something else.
Right.
And title was never about doing anything good for, consumers, and I said good riddance. I hope they get bought by someone who then folds.
Well,
and go to hell.
Well, I mean, I remember it was interesting after Prince died that the only place you could listen to his full catalog was Tidal,
and I'm sure that was flouting the law.
Probably,
I feel like you know, all of a sudden there was a lot of Prince on YouTube, right? All of a sudden, you could watch all the prints you wanted on YouTube as soon as he was dead. Because
sure.
Everybody was like,
sure.
Nobody's minding the store. And that they might be right. And that's going to be the saddest thing.
Well, but the title thing was actually he had agreed to that. That was.
I did not know that.
Yeah, that was the only place that he had agreed that all his... and I think it was like, you know, I don't know if it was like special editions or whatever. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, like if you wanted to listen to the full catalog streaming... that was, you know, other than buying, you know, the stuff physically, that was where you had to go, which, you know,
seems like a weird deal for Prince to make. He was what, like 57? And he's like making a deal, okay, when I die, you can stream my catalog?
No, I don't know if it was, I don't think it was because he died. I think that was just the only place he'd agreed.
Oh, you mean
the it was deal already, had just been done. It had already been done.
Oh, okay.
Like, as with the launch of Tidal. Yeah, I mean, he obviously hadn't been thinking about dying because I don't think he had a proper will set up.
Yeah, that's
a whole other mess, because that's going to be, you've got people coming out of the woods.
10 years.
People coming out of the woods like, oh, I'm his brother, I'm his son.
Well, and he had siblings, and he had half-siblings.
Yeah,
and,
so it's going to be a mess.
Yeah, and I think, you know, early press was saying, you know, the way the estate law defaults, I think, to the direct siblings, but the half siblings probably have a claim, and it's just how can you have
tied up in court forever.
Yeah, how can you have so much, and at no point you just had one good friend who told you to get proper legal counsel? People, just get a good lawyer. It's worth the money.
Yeah, especially like when you're that big.
Yeah,
Jesus.
Yeah,
because you know he didn't have any children.
That we know of.
Yeah. You know, he had a baby who died, you know, in infancy, but you know, far, and a, you know, a couple ex-wives, I guess, but that's about it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's going to be something to watch. But Tidal, you know, Tidal obviously, like, it looked kind of like bullshit to me, like, from the minute I heard about it.
Yeah, oh yeah. Straight out of the gate.
I mean, what's your take on sort of the state of streaming, because obviously Spotify's still out there, and you know, there's a couple of, I know, you know, you've got Apple Music and you've got a few other things, but you know, it doesn't seem like there's anything that's really getting it done.
Yeah, I think that generally consumers are lazy.
It's got to be easy,
and it's got to be easy, and the culture has changed so much in the last 16-17 years that the idea of just using your phone as your primary way to consume music is becoming the norm for people probably under the age of 34, 35. And I think music will become a service, and you know, it's gonna be, people will pay like they pay for cable TV, they'll pay for music, and it's gonna be Apple Music or Spotify or, you know, YouTube Red or whatever. And you know, I just think the acceptance of getting your music that way is only increasing, as you know, no one wants CDs. Vinyl is just for collectors and indie snobs and audiophiles, and there's nothing wrong with that. Cassettes are for, you know, crust punks and music
old
dweebs
dudes.
And old dudes.
Like
and,
me!
You know, yeah, guys with the rocking
guys,
the...
Guys with old cars.
Yeah, I was gonna say, guys rocking the OJ van. And so, I mean, I would say the state is strong. I don't know that it's settled, but I also, I don't see...
But I don't know how many people are paying money for it.
You yeah.
I mean, because... There are lots of ways to stream. You know, Spotify has a free version. You know, obviously you can stream shit on YouTube and Bandcamp and wherever. You know, I'm guessing people are trying to do... You know, there are obviously people who are going to pay for a premium kind of service.
Yeah.
But I think those people, you know, I mean, those are people with the means to do that. I don't know how many people have bought into the idea of treating music as, you know, like a cable subscription or something.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that's where it wants to go, but I don't know if that's the norm yet.
I think if the phone continues its dominance, there will be a way to make the phone user pay. If you and I think that will be the phone will be the dividing line. I think people will either pay for the app or pay monthly fee for the app because
can listen to Spotify on my phone and have to, you know, you just have to listen to ads every once in a while.
Right.
So it's a matter, I guess, if you get sick of listening to the ads, you know, then
yeah,
then
or it becomes more and more and more ads. Like, there's some days I look at Twitter and it's like,
Some days, you know, it's probably like every 10 or 15 days. Some days I look at Twitter and like every third thing in my feed is a paid tweet. And like,
yeah, I know. I'm surprised that a cable provider like Comcast hasn't bought a music service, and maybe they have, and just bundled it in so that, you know, or an internet provider. So like,
yeah,
when you, as you pay your monthly bill, you've got this thing on your phone. It gives you access to all the music, and you're already paying for it. It doesn't feel like it's, you know, a separate thing.
Yeah.
That would seem to be the way to do it, because then it's kind of just bundled in with all the other shit you already pay for, like TV, internet, phone. You know what I mean?
I think it's going to be the phone, and I think it's going to be a gradual decrease in the content going to the free tier. Yeah. And then...
Yeah, you're going to get less and less.
You're going to get less and less. You're going
to get... Eventually, it's going to be like, you can only listen to, like, 30 seconds of a song.
Yeah, well, and they started that...
Or, like, one song off of an album, you know.
They started that on SoundCloud a little bit with... on the desktop, anyway. I don't use it on my phone, but with the catalog they've licensed it, you know, as opposed to the stuff that has, you know, been its traditional user upload. The licensed stuff comes in as 30-second samples.
Oh, geez.
Because I saw... The only reason I know is the most recent Frightened Rabbit record came in that way. You know, I don't follow many major label bands, but since they are on Atlantic, I think, or something...
But they started off as an indie band.
Yeah, but the new record, when it came into my feed, it came in as 30-second samples, and I think it was because that's the deal was done, finally, between the major labels and SoundCloud. So anyway...
Wasn't SoundCloud, like, in big trouble? I thought they were going to go under.
It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I think I just re-upped my subscription, but for the whatever the limit is on, you know, basically for uploading stuff. But I still, that doesn't mean, I don't think my $40 is gonna save them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they offer anyone who, besides, you know, people like us, you know. So, you know, I don't know how they monetize something that isn't presently really monetizable. And I don't, you know, someone has to win, you would think, between SoundCloud and Bandcamp.
Yeah.
But what is winning? You know, I don't know. I think, does Bandcamp get a percentage of sales? I think, maybe.
I think so.
So, you know.
Yeah, Bandcamp and Noise Trade and what's the other
one? You know, Bandcamp just had a sort of a bogus story about their billionth download or something stupid like that. But it was worded, you know, I posted it to the Clicky Clicky Facebook page. You know, the wording was very loose, and I think they were saying, you know, a million or a billion or 10 million or whatever it was songs have been purchased, but I think that probably include purchases where the paying price was $0.
Wow, that's bullshit.
Because I just don't see how they were getting the math didn't add up.
Yeah,
I you know, broke it out in a comp.
So like
comment very simply.
So you actually paid, you know, 80,000 songs were actually paid for, but a billion songs were downloaded.
Right. Yeah, it's something like that, and it might have been.
Like, it is a sales transaction.
Yeah,
you have to enter zero.
Yep.
Or
and
10 or whatever amount you want, and then you click, you know, I'm purchasing this.
And I think that's why they do it that way.
That's stupid.
So, you know, Bandcamp can feel free to reach out to the podcast and set us straight, but and I don't remember the numbers or the exact details, but I called it out as fishy on the internet, so here's your warning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shots fired.
Yeah.
Alright. Let's move on to
mid-year review.
Mid-year review. What's your general take on the music that's come out so far this year?
There's a lot of good stuff happening, as always. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like my grasp on it is, you know, ever more tenuous. But, you know, I don't think there's any shortage of good things coming, and I don't think there's any shortage of good things that came out in the first half of the year. And I've got a list of a dozen or so things here that are certainly worth mentioning. I expect you do as well.
I do. What are some of your We usually do the kind of our top 10.
Yeah.
And then some honorable mentions. So what are some of the ones that didn't quite make your top 10?
Not quite making it. It's some local stuff and some English stuff. And so in the local bucket, there were very strong releases from New Dog, who is Anara Bottoloff, who was formerly in Metal Hearts and the more well-known thing with that lady. You guys know what I'm talking about. Travels with Mona Elliott. So this was, you know, Anar launched New Dog and came out of the gate pretty strong with a debut that I think was on Kill Rock Stars. Teeth Marks was just as strong, not necessarily as guitar based. He was more of a, you know, songwriter at a piano kind of thing, electric piano, and but it's still very you know, sort of resting. It's very, very moody. He has shares management with Mark Kozelek now. That very and you know, I don't know that Mr. Kozelek is much of an influence, but you know, this sort of there was a great interview between the two where they talked about how they both had a love of boxing, which was interesting. And the sort of
makes sense since Kozelek's always starting fights.
Yeah, they the storytelling is just really strong on the Teeth Marks record, and I certainly recommend it. Horse Jumper of Love, another local act, kind of doing a slow core shoegaze thing. They had a self-titled record out in the first half of the year that I thought was terrific. You know, I'd been hearing a bunch of the songs were on the demo, so I'd been hearing this stuff for a while. They Horse Jumper and New Dog both played a clicky clicky thing for the Together Fest in 2015, so I was pleased with the Horse Jumper record. Disappointed it didn't get really much respect from Pitchfork, but my feelings about Pitchfork are well known.
Pantsfork, I believe.
Yes, Crotchfork. So. You know, don't listen to them. The record is good. Another local act, Guillermo Sexo, the Dream Pop veterans. Their record Eclipse was also very strong. A little more polished. A little more of a space rock thing. Fireworks going off. Yo. It's not gunfire, people. Just fireworks. And then a gold...
Cat popping their ass.
Yeah, cat popping. Listeners may recall our affinity for the band Soccer Mom, which has disbanded, and now Will and Dan have joined up with Justin Lally from Earthquake Party and Beach Toys, and Deb Warburton of Swirlies and Broken River Prophet, I think it is, in a band called Gold Muse, and they've released, I think, 8 digital singles. No, 4 digital singles, 8 songs.
Yeah.
And, you know, so the 4 songs this year have been terrific. The most recent pair were recorded by, you know, that guy who records the stuff, Brad Krieger, from Hanging Horse Studios in Norwood, Massachusetts, who's recorded a bunch of up-and-comers. So the new single, the latest single, was terrific. I like the work that they did with Brad, I hope they work with him again. That was a pretty fruitful pairing. I like the singles have been very, very good. They've decided to focus on, you know, writing smaller batches of songs, and I think that's really worked for them. 2 things from England that I fancy. California Snow Story returns with... what might be their 4th record? I can't really remember. It might only be their 2nd, but it's their first record in about 9 years called Some Other Places. It's very kind of a gentle, pastoral, dream pop situation. And it was the founder was in a prominent band, and I can't recall which one it was. I want to say Aztec Camera, but I don't think that's true.
Roddy Frame?
Yeah, it wasn't. So it's not Roddy Frame or Aztec Camera. It's but
it could have been one of the other dudes.
I don't think it is. That's not sitting correctly in my mouth. But you know, it's a band that might have had an American deal on like a Matador or Merge. But anyway, we can look it up another time.
Neither
here nor there, but definitely somewhere else. My last honorable mention goes to Your Poetry, which is the duo of Alexi Barrow and Junior Elvis Washington Laidley from Johnny Foreigner, merging their solo projects of Your Friends and Fridge Poetry for an EP called Rocket Season, which is terrific, and presaged the very good Johnny Foreigner album, which is out in England next week. And probably out in America by the end of the summer. So that's a very hot slate of honorable mentions. What do you have that is honorable or mention-worthy?
Mentionable. Radiohead put out a new album after several years of not putting out an album.
Yep, I just filed it away. Mine came in the mail on Friday.
Okay. Yeah, it's called The Moon-Shaped Pool. Very good. I haven't listened to it enough. It probably would have made my top 10 if I had listened to it a little more. Very kind of... it's electronic, but there's more instrumentation than on like some of their real kind of bleep lorp albums that they put out in the early 2000s. So it's good stuff. You know, it's not like... You know, there's no necessarily stirring anthems like, you know, sort of... old Radiohead, but you know that's to be expected.
Yeah,
but
definitely not a guitar record. I've listened to it about five times today.
Yeah, there's some guitar on it that kind of pops up, and you know, but it, you know, they've kind of moved on from that. So
yeah,
but there's some interesting songs on it. So you know, I still need to delve into it more, but I definitely enjoy it.
Yeah, I honestly thought that was in my top 10, but I'm looking at it and I don't see it. So that was certainly one I've been thinking about a lot.
Talk to the guy who made your list.
Yeah, jerk.
Yeah. Another one in my honorable mentions is Ty Segall. What's that?
I thought the Van Halen might be a little loud. Is it loud, people? Too loud?
Maybe it might be a little loud.
Echo quieter.
Oh, real quiet.
Right.
That's better. Ty Segall, Emotional Mugger. Mm-hmm. You know, this dude's been cranking out the good rock for several years now. This is a really weird album. You know, it's still kind of full of the Ty Segall garage rock goodness. A lot of awesome guitar. There's a lot of kind of the theme of candy, which seems like about drugs, but like he's been doing a lot of like really awesome appearances on like Conan O'Brien stuff, wearing like his baby mask. Yeah, he's wearing like a baby mask, and he's just like, yeah, he's kind of going, he's out there, but you know, it's top notch like his other stuff. I think it doesn't quite meet the level of his last album, but which was incredible, but you know, still good shit. Another one that I'm still digging into is Modern Baseball's Holy Ghost. It's out on Merge. And they're kind of, you know, definitely kind of just, you know, of the indie rock, general indie rock variety, but, you know, definitely some strong songwriting on those songs. You know, they're, I forget who they're touring with right now, but they're kind of, they're making a name for themselves. I'm still kind of, digging that stuff, but it's on my list nonetheless. Future of the Left, Peace and Truce of Future of the Left.
Yeah, I haven't listened to that yet.
Good album. You know, obviously, it sounds like Future of the Left, you know, very kind of sardonic lyrics, packs a punch. You know, it's Andy Falkus of McCluskey, and you know, I think this is probably like the fifth or sixth Future of the Left album. You know, it's they're consistently good.
The albums come kind of like clockwork. You know, I feel like he's
like every other year,
2 months or so. Yeah. So he's certainly kept up the pace, and the quality seems to follow.
And they've basically been doing kind of, I think it's pledge music that they've been kind of get crowdfunding their last few records, just because I think, you know, they're not on a label anymore, so.
As far as I know, they're on the great Matt Dottillo.
Yeah, right. Matt Dottillo, he's
the guy who lets me know when they're coming, and
If it wasn't for him, I don't know.
And I was gonna contribute to this, and I just forgot. But I wish they'd come over here because you know I'd love to see him. But yeah, you know, it's just so, like you know, dealing with Johnny Foreigner, it's so expensive for these, you know.
Yeah, English Brexit. Let's not derail the show by talking about Brexit, but you know, the general consensus is that is going to hurt English brands trying to go
even,
to the continent.
Even more. I mean, it was already hard for them to get over here.
Yeah.
But that's, I mean, you know, they're just such a great band. So, you know, they basically, you know, you can get it on Amazon and stuff like that now. So I highly recommend it. Half Sour Tuesday Night Live.
Yeah, it's a good record.
It's an excellent record.
Yeah. Local.
Are they local?
Yeah.
I think I got that from Bandcamp, but you know, I probably learned about them reading the Clicky
Yeah,
blog.
Yeah, it's a good blog, I hear.
Yeah, it, you know,
you're kind of a GBV disciples.
ClickyClickyMusic.com. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, very very tuneful.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of fun. Another album I enjoy a lot is Used Cassettes, Rock and Reels. These guys are in.
Don't notice. This is new to me.
Yeah, this I got this on one of the PR lists that you know that I'm on for the radio show. I'm trying to figure they're like in Korea or something, but they're Americans that are living over there. And
suspicious.
But they kind of sound like the singer sounds a little like Julian Casablancas fronting Parquet Courts. Like there's very, you know, yeah, the album's called Rockin' Rills. Yeah, they're based in Seoul, Korea. But it's a really good, great, you know, great guitar work. It's, you know, he definitely sounds like, you know, definitely sounds kind of like, it's like the Strokes, but, you know, not, you know, musically they don't sound like the Strokes at all. But a lot of you know, just kind of good guitar, some kind of, you know, I wouldn't say jammy, but like kind of, you know, they kind of lock in like Parquet Courts tends to do and, mm-hmm. and you know, kind of. They make the most out of a good riff. So, I haven't been able to play it on the radio show because I got the thing came in MP4s. I can only play MP3s, so I got to convert them. But yeah, it's good stuff.
You are listening to Completely Conspicuous with Jay Kumar.
That wraps up episode 430 of Completely Conspicuous. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you join me next time when Jay Breitling and I continue our look at the best music of the year so far. In the meantime, check out BFF.fm every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 Pacific, to hear my radio show, Stuck in the Garage. Check out Mixcloud.com/Coombdog to listen to archive shows. Jay Breitling produced the opening and closing themes of this show. Voiceover work is courtesy of James Grailian. Completely Conspicuous is a Tan God production.